All right. Here we go.
Now I think we have all our levels right and
everything's good.
Sterling has figured out that you have to hit record.
Yeah, lick it. Audacity seems to have some sort of a problem, and we rebooted, and now it works.
So, reboot your machine. And did you shut all the way down? No.
What?
At work, that's all what we always ask people.
Did you shut all the way down? Did you shut all the way down?
Yes. So, that's episode 20.
I know.
Shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Comments and corrections.
Yes, I pulled a comment up from Blue Screen Mike.
Yes, I saw this. Blue Screen Mike, in reference to the D20 OGL, says, newcomers to tabletop role-playing will have to purchase both the independent system and a D&D or a D20 modern core book.
Right.
What does that mean?
And he was talking about that in reference to the fact that we talked, a week and a half ago, last episode 19, we talked about the OpenGL,
OGL.
The OGL, the Open Gaming License for Wizards of the Coast. And he talked about the fact that you actually still need to buy the core books. If you have a D20 compliant system, you know, it's like an extra. You can make a game on it, but you still need to buy the core books. And he just said, you know, if somebody's comfortable with the D20 system and they like it, you know, but they want to play this other game that's based on it because it's a good system.
It's a good system too. I think the only thing that could be changed about the D20 system, in my opinion, is I really like how the Chaosium system does the skills, and I wish they would do it like that.
I don't.
You don't?
No.
Really?
I just don't think it fits with the system.
Yeah, maybe that's the problem.
You get skills based on your class, which reflect how much time you'd spend studying skills versus, you know what I mean? Like a fighter gets less skills as he levels as a fighter because that reflects the time you spend fighting versus the time you spend learning
other types of things. How they do the
raises.
They don't have levels in Chaosium, but I like how they do the how they raise the level of your skills is essentially what you do is. If you use a particular skill during an adventure, you put a mark next to that skill. And at the end of the adventure, you roll against that skill. And if you fail, you get D6 added. It's all a percentile system. You get D6 added to that skill. Which, the reason I like it is because, first of all, the more you use your skills, the better you will get at them.
Yes.
And secondly, the higher percentage you have, the more difficult it is to move up, which I think makes sense to me. It does make sense. It's reflective of
the
reality.
The more you know about something, the harder it is to find more things you don't know about it.
That's right.
Right?
That's
right. It works with anything.
Yeah. So if you've got like a quick draw skill or something like that, chances are if you've got an 80% at your quick draw, that using it once or twice during an adventure, you're not going to have any revelations about how to do it even faster.
Right.
So.
Right.
Anyway, I just like that idea.
I do in that system, for the D&D system. The D20 system. I'm not saying it's a perfect system. But
right. No, and I agree. I think that, I don't think, at least the way we play, the skills play a significant role anyway.
Right.
So it's not really that
I'm working on that.
Big a deal anyway. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that should be interesting.
Because I want to do, you know, I want to role play as well. The problem is I have to make it fun enough for everyone, even the people who don't particularly care about that part, to care about it.
Well, this is something I thought was interesting. I think I was listening to the Geeks On, where they were talking about GMs and gaming and things like that. One of the things that he said was there's a difference between saying, well, Ulfgar is going to go to go talk to the bartender, and he asked the bartender this thing.
Right.
And there's a difference between that and, okay, Ulfgar will approach the bartender. You know, and then you get into bartender character.
Right, where I'm like, of, hey there, Sonny.
Right.
What can I get you?
Right. And so you sort of say, don't say what your character's going to do. You know, or don't say what your character's going to say. Say it.
Right.
So, and I think that's more of a mindset than it is changing anything. I mean, you're not actually saying anything different.
Right.
It's just a mindset.
Yeah.
So I think maybe using that technique would create more of a role-playing
game.
Well,
and it's funny, because what happens a lot of times is you go, oh, it sounds kind of stupid when I talk like that. And then I think, wait a minute, I'm playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
Stupid anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. So I think that incorporating skills would be one of those other things that would sort of, and you and I had talked about this before, is that when I developed my character, my wizard, I gave him like dungeoneering skills, because my whole plan was that he was going to build some tower and some maze was going to be beneath it and all that jazz. And I've never used the skill.
Right. Part of that's my fault, though. I mean, I need to provide opportunities to use those skills.
I think most of it is just the style in which we play and the number of people that we have gaming with us isn't conducive to a whole lot of role-playing.
Right.
I think that the other problem that we have, in all honesty, is we never have a leader.
No, because nobody likes to listen to anybody else.
Yeah.
They all have their own set plan in their mind, and they're going to do that.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things that I was thinking, because Sterling and I are starting to put together a new adventure.
Yeah, I like the idea, too.
And one of the things I thought of with when you've got 12 guys playing, you can have some points at which you break people off.
They diverge.
When you have two DMs, that makes that much more manageable.
Yes.
The only problem with that is then you've got to like move six people out of the room.
Well, basically what we'd have to do is set up two tables in two different rooms so we could play at both tables.
Right, but then how do they play together?
Well, no, you can have them sit at one table, but get ready. I mean, you're ready before the adventure.
Oh, I see.
To move them
off
to another table.
So it's easy to move off to another table.
Okay, this group, go to this table.
Yes.
So.
Yep.
Well, so anyway, basically Mike's comment was, it's not really fair.
we digressed a little bit, didn't we?
It's not really fair to say, I really like this game. It's based on the D20 system. Not only do I have to buy this game because it's got rules specific to itself, but,
right.
You know, and now I have to buy the core rule books. How can you call that an open gaming license? You know what I mean? When you can't actually make a game.
So a genuine open gaming license would have freely published materials
that you could modify. You could modify the character.
It's like being able to read the source code for Linux.
Right.
If you wanted to, you could download the source code and read through it.
Right.
For free.
And now there are things that you can do, like Monty Cook used to work. I think he worked on the 3.0 system of D&D, and now he kind of does his own thing, and he's like made a modified player's handbook.
Oh, there you go.
But he made it specifically to go along with that. But he modified things. He modified all the classes and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think the other thing that I don't know that we've talked about this before, but my opinion as far as role-playing is that I think that the actual system is 10 to 20% of the gaming experience.
Yes.
It's the adventure, the DM, and the other characters that I think are 90%.
Right.
Of your gaming experience. So I think that if you're developing a game under the open gaming license, then you're doing it for fun. You're doing it because you enjoy developing games.
Right.
You're not doing it so this resource is available to thousands of gamers out there because it's some new, awesome, incredible system that nobody's thought of before.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really happen.
I've got so many gaming systems I've come up with trying to find the god of gaming systems, you know, that system that just covers everything. It's impossible.
Well, and it's ultimately, it's not really about that anyway.
No, it's not.
It's all about personal preference. Do you like, you know, Call of Cthulhu for its horror aspects and its high mortality rate? Do you like D&D for the hack and slash and the character development?
Right.
Do you like, one of my favorite old school games is Traveller. Because with Traveller, one of the things they did was they gave you an adventure, but the adventure booklet that they gave you was really thin. And essentially, it would give you a rough plot, and it would give you predefined characters, and that was about it.
Right.
So really, it'd be the situation where, and I've seen you do this as well, where, okay, we've landed at the spaceport. Well, is there like a local bar, sort of a spaceport hangout? Yeah.
Sure.
You know, so sometimes your players actually end up developing the adventure for you.
Yeah, and they're even the officially published adventures, they have, there's gaps. I mean, huge gaps.
Right. No.
Where it's, they expect. Right. I mean, you can't cover all the things
and,
that can happen.
And well, Traveller was one of those that was all six sided as well.
Yeah.
So it was a very simplified. So like I say, I think that if you're developing something under the OGL, then I really wouldn't worry about people having to download core rules or buy core rules.
Well,
because that's your other option.
Now all the core rules are available, however, for free.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they technically, I guess, they don't have to buy them. You can just get the SRDs, which are freely available from Wizards of the Coast.
Oh, really?
It's all the rules.
Ah, I didn't know
right?
that.
Right. You only get the expanded stuff. It's all the core rules needed to run a game.
Ah.
All the stuff from the Dungeon Master's Guide.
So it is open. The players. It is available for download then.
Yeah. So I guess that ruins the whole point, doesn't
okay.
it?
Okay. I'm glad we talked about this.
I'm going to kind of roll this into the next portion as we get to martial arts section, but I wanted to talk about the fact that what we just said was right. The system is irrelevant. I mean,
yeah.
Really, it's the system is the way you do it. And I want to relate this to martial arts. There's no one martial arts system that is the ultimate system.
Right.
There are good martial artists. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's who you work with and how you work. The martial artist is what's good. It has nothing to do with the system. I mean, the system may lead certain people in certain directions that make them a better martial artist. But you can't claim that's the best system because of it.
Well, I remember talking to Sam Chan, who runs Chan's Kung Fu here, and he had pointed out that a school really consists... There's three aspects of a school that are important to people, and we talked about this when talking about finding a good school, and that's instructor, other students, and style. And those three aspects of a school are really what makes the heart of a school. And while I see what you're saying about the martial artist being a martial artist regardless of their style, at the same time, I do think that if you want to be a street fighter, you know, if you live in a really rough neighborhood, I wouldn't study Tai Chi.
No, right. But the point is, if you live in a really tough neighborhood and you study Tai Chi and you happen to be a really good fighter, that doesn't mean Tai Chi's the best system. That's my point.
Oh,
you
right.
You can be
yes.
really good martial artist
yes.
independent of the system you study.
Yes. Yes. And I do think that, I pick on Tai Chi with the street fighting thing, but I also think that studying any martial art will make you a better all-around martial artist.
Right.
And I've actually found that to be especially true of Tai Chi, in that it helps you with your balance, it helps you with your focus.
That's exactly right.
It helps you with a lot of those really basic things, you know.
And general body mechanics.
General body
mechanics. Being comfortable moving in your own skin.
Breathing, stuff like that, so... So what's this thing about Art Comancho Stunt Fighting Workshop?
I think I spelled it wrong on the wiki.
Hi-ya!
Art Comancho Stunt...
Camacho, not Comancho.
Art Comancho is apparently one of Hollywood's leading action directors and stunt choreographers. I've never heard of him.
Neither have I.
However,
but how many could you name any other than him?
I'm horrible at those kind of names.
Right, me too.
So I basically put this on there because it was really cool. This guy's basically giving a stunt fighting workshop. It's on February 26th of this year, and however, unfortunately, it's in Woodland Hills, California.
Right.
But it's $95 per person.
That's not bad, really.
No, for a one-day workshop on You know,
that's
plus,
not bad.
It's a great way to build contacts too. I'm sure, that's, you know, true. If you want to get into that stuff, I personally would love to do stunt work in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, I would live for that stuff. That would be so fun.
I do believe we have a couple listeners in California.
Do we?
Yeah.
Well, there you go, guys. If you're interested in that, check this out. I mean, you really can't go wrong for $95 to get involved with some guy who apparently, you know, at least according to this. Do you recognize any of these movies?
Redemption, Little Bigfoot, Extreme Fighter.
Right. He's done choreography for Steven Seagal, John Saxon.
And more.
So, anyhow. It would probably be a good thing to do for some fun.
$100
Yeah, I mean, it's $100. There's probably going to be some people there at least for some semi-contact gaining.
And that's a fairly typical price for a martial arts seminar.
Right.
You know? So, well, it looks interesting.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it looks very interesting. Okay, I put this up here.
Martial Arts 101.
Yeah, I'm not going to remember the guy's name. Trevor, I think it is. Anyway, the guy that runs martialarts101.com sent me an email and asked if I wanted to review the site on the podcast.
Really?
Yes.
Sweet.
And gave us... I forgot to forward it to you. Sorry, dude.
That means we need to actually remember his name properly, so...
Oh, shit. Gave us a free username and password so that we could get into the site and review it.
So did you?
Yes, I did. But all right. I'm just jonesing because... oh, shit. See, I wanted to say this episode is brought to you by martialarts101.com.
You just did.
Oh, hey. What do you know? Because it's our first free stuff.
That's awesome.
It's just a login, but still.
Hey, I think that's very cool.
I liked the site a lot. I think that it's in all honesty, I've surfed the net for a long time trying to think of a single place to get to sort of have a martial arts community.
Yeah, you've talked about that before.
And they've got news groups out there, but they're sort of disjointed. They've got a lot of sites out there that are either style-based.
Right.
Or school-based.
They're very specific.
They're very specific. And one I started on that actually just died, it used Slash, which is the Slashdot backend.
Really?
It used Slash to sort of post stories and comments about those stories and things like that. But this site has a lot of good news and articles. It's also got several specific styles that it's dealing with. He said that they were going to come out with more styles as the site develops.
Actually, they have a Sambo link.
They have Sambo link on there.
That is sweet.
Yeah.
I've been curious about that specifically since I've been looking into Scott Sonnen and the stuff he's been doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so something, and the flexibility and strength and the diet, and so it's a nice all-around resource for the martial artist.
All right. And you know, I see here on the main page it says learn martial arts online from $9.95 a month, but free for the first 30 days.
Well, this is my only criticism of the whole thing.
All right.
One, I don't think that you can learn martial arts online.
Personally, it's going to be no different from like learning it from a videotape, right?
I don't think you can learn it from a videotape either.
Well, no, right, but I mean that's the gist of it.
Yes. But the other problem I have is $10 a month is a little steep. That's a little steep in my opinion. Now, I did go through the Taekwondo portion of it. They have...
Or Taekwondo, for those of us who can pronounce it. I don't know how it's pronounced. Is that how it's pronounced?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth.
I just wanted to give you a hard time.
Yeah, cocksucker. They have videos of all the forms.
Okay.
They have videos of some kicking techniques, some punching techniques. So,
and how are the videos? Are they done at two different angles?
They are. They're really pretty cool, awesome. Actually. It's that's the thing, is while I think that the $10 a month is a little bit steep, the first 30 days is free.
Right.
So there's no reason to not try it. I think that it's far more beneficial to a beginner. Like, one of the things that we're trying to do with our school is I am recording some video so that if you don't quite remember a form, you can go up to the website and pull it down.
It's an excellent reminder tool.
It's an excellent reminder tool. And what they do here, it's really kind of cool, is they've actually got two angles in one video. So it's like widescreen.
Very
right?
nice.
And it's split down the middle, and they've got two angles, and I'm sure they just set up two cameras because it's perfectly synchronized. So it's pretty cool, and I'll tell you what, if you were either a beginner or I guess even an advanced student that was learning a new form and it was like, I'm not quite sure, because it happens to me all the time.
I know,
where
me too.
I know the beginning and I know the end, but there's like one or two moves in there that I'm not sure how they link right. it together.
And you just flail a little and move past it.
Right,
and
exactly. Like, and so this would be a great resource to just say, what was that one little piece there? It's also, in all honesty, if you're getting into the martial arts, once the other styles, once they start developing more styles for this thing, it would be a great way to sort of go up here and say, what is it that I want to learn?
Right.
You know?
Where does he get his... Where's he getting like his information? I mean, how's he going to go add additional styles? I mean, does he look for submissions?
I think he looks for schools.
Submissions of content, or... Oh, he looks for schools
he looks
who
for
want to
schools
participate.
That want to participate.
On the
because, like, if you go into the Taekwondo here, it is quite extensive.
Holy smokes,
yeah,
it is.
Like, there's a lot of video on
wow.
here. A lot of video. I wonder if we can get a free one now.
Very interesting.
But, yeah. And then just the Martial Arts 101 section is... kind of just articles. They've got tips of the week, things like that. Oh, and they also have a podcast.
Wow.
They have a vidcast.
Very
actually.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's a good site. Like I say, the with Martial Arts 101
Plus,
you get three martial arts styles for only $14.95. So the ten bucks a month must be one style. And you get the other styles if you pay more money.
An extra $5 a month, you get two
An
more,
extra five
two
bucks a month,
styles.
You get two more. And this is interesting. Goju-Ryu, Shotokan, and Muay Thai. And so those must be coming then.
Right.
But I definitely say it's at least worth checking out, poking around.
Especially for the first, you know.
Get your 30 days for free.
Check it out and see what you think.
And if you want to pay for it after
I personally want to check this out.
Just looking through
some of the flexibility and strength and maybe some of the diet stuff, actually.
Yeah, and just looking through the articles. I mean, even if you don't want to pay for it, you can come up here and just cruise through the articles, you know?
Very interesting.
And I don't know who does all these articles, but I'm guessing it's just the community that these people know.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So, anyway.
MartialArts101.com?
MartialArts-101.com.
Oh, the dash is in there?
The dash is in there.
Okay. MartialArts-101.com.
So, I like it. Good
cool.
stuff. Good stuff. Moving on.
We already gave our tech tip for the day.
Do we have any more martial arts stuff? It seems like we have.
No, this was... I actually put a lot of RPG stuff on this episode.
Okay.
I was trying to think of a good concept for us to cover this week, but I didn't really have any good ideas.
Okay.
And I didn't want to...
Just
know,
throw something out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I didn't want to just throw something out there. Yeah. I feel like I'm shirking the audience if I do that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know... it's weird because we haven't done a podcast in so long.
I know.
Like, I don't remember
Christmas,
what we did and what we didn't.
Christmas
and,
break and that kind of stuff that went through. Yeah. And.
Well, my black belt test is scheduled now... officially scheduled for March.
Yes.
The last weekend of March, so I'm freaking out about that a little bit.
Yes.
Gotta quit smoking.
Yes.
That's my big one. That will be my black belt challenge, is to quit smoking. I've also got to do... Chuck has everyone in the school do something called a black... Well, I don't know if it's his terminology. I call it a black belt thesis.
Yes.
And so I've got to think of something for my black belt thesis.
Right. And I think, well, you know, and what Lori did is she went out and studied another art.
Aikido.
You know, yeah, Aikido.
She studied Aikido.
And brought some techniques
yeah.
in for
And
hers.
I was thinking about doing that with ground fighting. I talked to Jen about it, my wife, and because I was thinking about doing ground fighting.
Right.
Because it's just something that interests me. It's something that we don't do a whole lot
we
of.
We don't do a whole lot of. I would like to do that as well.
The only thing is it's for the private lessons, they're $50 an hour.
I know.
So it's a little steep, and I was talking to Jen about it, and she goes, you know, what do you think you'd need? And I'm guessing like 3 to just get a familiarity with the basics.
Right, because it doesn't have to be, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be this you know, all knowledgeable, all inclusive.
No, no, no.
Package you bring to the table.
No, it just has to sort of be a sampling of, you know, what are the basic concepts of the whole thing. So yeah, $150. That wouldn't be undoable. So I might do that. But I've got a couple other coals in the fire, and maybe we'll talk about that in our next episode.
Cool.
So let's move straight to tech and science stuff. Wow, we don't have a whole lot of this either. The first item on the list is Dan's new iPod.
Dan's new iPod. Techno slut strikes again.
I am the techno slut. I am the gadget guy. I've got to have all the new toys. And I'll tell you what, the reason I've got to have all the new toys is because I have such a positive experience with everyone that I get that it's Pavlovian by now, you know? But this, so I got the 30 gig fifth generation iPod video. And this thing is cool.
Yeah.
It is really cool. 30 gigs holds a tremendous amount. And I've been... I know that how some people use their iPods is they take their entire music collection and move it to their iPod.
Right.
And I'm not really doing that because, like, I've ripped some albums where there's 3 or 4 songs on there that I don't really like.
Right.
But I just pulled the whole album because I'm not going to pick and choose. You know, right. It's too much of a hassle. So I'm sort of picking and choosing, and I've got about 10 gigs of music on there. I've got about...
It's a lot of music.
It's a lot of music. I've got about 4... I've probably got about 10 gigs of video on there.
Nice.
Right?
What's that, about 10, 12 movies maybe?
It's about 700 megs for a 2-hour movie. So yeah, about that.
Wow, for a 2-hour movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
So I've got a bunch of full-length movies on there. I downloaded an episode of Battlestar Galactica, which I've been watching, which I forgot to put in here, but I'll put it in movie stuff. So I've been watching Battlestar Galactica. And I guess the thing that I wanted to mention, the thing that I have linked to in the show notes, is DVD Decryptor and Videora iPod Converter. This is a really... One of the things that I had the biggest problem with was... And I... From everything I've read, and my understanding is, it's perfectly legal to take a DVD that you have purchased and that you own and move its contents onto your personal iPod.
See, I never understood how that... Because the problem with the DVD is not moving the content. It's decrypting the DVD.
And that's why we have this piece of software called DVD Decryptor.
And I thought that breaking through the... the original problem I thought was originally the people who were developing the way to decrypt a DVD,
yeah.
that was illegal. You're not allowed to break the DVD decryption.
I think that you are not allowed to develop technology that breaks DVD decryption.
Correct.
Yes.
Which would be DVD decryptor.
I'm not developing technology.
No,
that
you
breaks,
no, right.
Right.
You're not.
So I don't know. There's a real gray area
I
in
know.
There. And if you're especially concerned about it, it's something you might want to check out a bit further. But in my personal opinion, I think from an ethical standpoint, if you own the DVD, then you should be able to watch that video anywhere you want.
I completely
agree. You shouldn't be able to sell it on the street corner for $5 a copy. That's wrong.
Right.
But if I want to load it onto my iPod and I want to watch it there, I should be able to.
I completely agree.
So, the legal implications aside, essentially you use DVD Decryptor to pull down the VOB, VOB file, onto your hard drive. And then this Videora iPod converter will actually take that VOB file and convert it into a file that you can watch on your iPod.
That's sweet.
It's very cool.
That is really sweet.
And you might have... I had some audio syncing problems, so...
Yeah, you mentioned that.
You'll want to check out the board. I think that there's a couple of keywords that you can use in the custom settings for the converter.
Okay.
But... I actually bought the $30 add-in for MPEG-2 decoding for the QuickTime Pro. And it still didn't work.
No.
So this is the only thing that worked, and it's all free.
Right.
Which
nice.
Is fucking sweet.
It's now, really nice. Gotta love open source software.
Videora does have a $30 product that's really cool, which is essentially you can have it check RSS feeds for new video content. It'll automatically download that video content, convert it for your iPod, and load it onto your iPod automatically.
Oh, that's sweet.
Which is pretty cool. Sweet. Now, the only thing about that is that most video podcasts are done with the intention of being watched on an iPod. And they're done through iTunes.
Right.
So they're most likely going to be compatible with your iPod anyway.
All right.
But you can also have this piece of software set up so that it converts it and downloads it to your PSP.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Now if only my PSP came with 30 gigs.
Yeah,
That's the one thing that I just don't like about my PSP.
And I think the one thing that frustrates me about Sony is that the PSP on the top of it has a USB mini port.
I know.
There's no reason that couldn't be... You shouldn't be able... It frustrates me that you can't stick a mass storage device in there and just read it like a hard drive.
It will eventually. Someone will make some hack. Hopefully it'll be Sony, so it won't have to be a hack.
Somebody said to me the other day that they don't do that because they want to sell 1 gig cards.
But they come standard with a...
With a 1 gig card now?
Yeah, the PSPs now sell standard, same price, the $249 that we bought ours for.
With a one gig card. Cock smokers. Yes. Wow, dude.
Yeah, but I'm sure partly because people were bitching about it. I mean, yeah. It came with a 32-meg card. What am I going to do with a 32-meg card?
Save your games.
My games. That is it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go spend another $200 for a 1 gig card.
I ended up spending the money on a 512 just because I wanted to put video content and stuff. Fuck that. I'm going to put it on my iPod video.
Yeah, there's no reason not to.
The other thing that this thing does that's super sweet is you can hook a cable up to it and have it output to your TV.
Right, which is nice.
And interestingly enough, on Apple's site, they sell a cable for $30.
Yeah.
And they say on the site that this is the only cable that will work with your iPod. That's bullshit.
Those rat bastards.
I took the cable from my camcorder, plugged it in.
And it worked. It's USB.
It didn't work.
What?
You know why?
Why?
Because... The right audio, which is red, is the video feed.
Oh.
So they switched the cables around.
You know what? That right there...
Isn't that pure
evil? I'm
going
to call bullshit on that. Bullshit on you, Apple. You cocksuckers.
That's pure evil.
I hate that. Yeah. There's no reason for that whatsoever. No.
But it's... At the end of the whole
thing...
Probably
thank Steve Jobs for that one, too. I don't want anybody to be able to do anything that's compatible with any of our stuff. Just us. Me.
Well, it's like, you know, you're making people think they have to buy this $30 cable from you when they've already got one sitting at home.
I know.
And even if they tried it, they would probably try it and plug it into the wrong ports. And go, oh, shit, it's not working. That sucks.
So, but all you gotta do is swap them and it worked fine.
Yeah. Let's see. Red goes in. Red is video. Yellow is the white audio, and white is the red audio.
Wait a minute. So all he did was took the regular RCA outputs,
yes.
And they just swapped
them
which
around.
Color was which.
Yep.
What a bunch of dicks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost creepy. Man. But moving on from there, once I got that working, the quality is pretty impressive. I would say it's better than VHS, but not quite as good as DVD.
Huh.
I'm sure it would look quite different on a high def TV, but I don't have a high def TV, so what's
or better? You can look at it through your iBud.
My iBud?
Yes, your iBud.
What's an iBud?
The iBud is a $500 piece of hardware.
No.
Wear on your head.
Way,
it's
dude.
It's got a monocle that hangs down over your right eye and is equivalent to looking at a 100-inch TV from 12 feet away.
That is awesome.
Fully compatible with the video iPod.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's expected to retail for
$599.
No, thank you.
Yep.
I'll just actually.
Well,
you
how
know
much
what?
Does a 100-inch TV cost?
You know what you could also do, dude. That's I mean, this idea is crazy, but you could just hold your iPod really close to your face.
There you go.
Wow!
Just take
I
a sweatband and took your iPod upside down, put the sweatband
that's right.
on him. And, right there,
and
the hand
jam it
right
up
there.
Right next to your eyeball. Wow, I can't see anybody buying this thing.
The iBud. Well, obviously, it's not ready for commercial use yet. I mean, who's gonna, you know who's gonna buy it?
Holy shit! Look how tiny that screen
yeah,
is.
It's the size of a quarter, smaller than a quarter.
Oh, I know why it's so expensive.
Yeah,
is because it's tiny but still has a high resolution.
Right.
Wow.
I just thought it was a very cool piece of hardware.
It is a very cool piece of hardware.
Someday, these kinds of things will be affordable to the general public. I mean, nobody's going to dump $600. I mean, somebody will, obviously. There's
yeah, it's,
that have
it's,
to throw away,
it's
going to
be an implant before I use it.
An implant.
Actually, one of the things that Boeing is already using is something similar to this, in that they'll have technicians working on an airplane, and they will have one of their eyes is sort of this see-through monitor.
And like so, a HUD.
Like a HUD, yeah. And they can pull up schematics.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Isn't that cool? It's a neat idea.
See, I want to see that kind of stuff in daily use by normal
consumers.
Yeah,
me too.
You know, I mean, some people are like all freaked out about like that kind of stuff. But
we had the one Fat Nintendo night so long ago.
Right, with the glasses.
And Paul's friend, I can't remember his name now. Anyway, he brought these glasses. The craziest thing about them is that when you're playing a racing game and you lean, the screen doesn't lean anymore. It's like the whole thing goes with you.
Right.
Very strange.
Yeah,
feeling.
It's hard. Yeah, because as you you have to. It's a different. It's a, definitely a different.
Different experience.
Different sense about it when you do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Strange stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I know. So the iBud. If anybody out there has a whole lot of money to waste and a video iPod.
Yeah, if anyone listening wants to buy one of those and review it, they can.
Seriously?
They can send us the money instead.
We'll only charge you half.
Yeah, and we'll call it crap. Okay, so this is the other really cool thing I found last couple of weeks is.
Audio Video Archive.
The Audio Video Archive. And what this is I believe it's part of the Creative Commons. And essentially what they're doing is that all of the things that are going into public domain, they're posting out on the internet.
Wow.
So one of the coolest ones is under moving images on the left-hand side. They have, shit, what's the best ones?
They have shit.
No, they don't have shit. Well, maybe they do, but...
Open source movies.
Open source movies. One of the ones that I found were old Three Stooges movies.
Oh, funny.
Because they're open source now. You know? So
wow,
well they're not open too. They're not open source. They're in the public domain.
Right.
And they've got a lot of maybe this is a tech tip instead of in science and technology, but I just put websites in science
audio,
and technology. They've got lots of good
live
audio.
Music archive?
They've got texts. Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Which we should check out the music archive. Oh, what music are we going to use this week?
I don't know.
I guess I'll have to pick something and then...
We'll tell people next week.
We'll tell people next week. There we go.
Because that's the way we work.
Yeah. We don't plan ahead that far. So check out the Internet
Archive. We're recovering from Christmas break here still.
I'll tell you what. This is almost as bad as videos.google.com for
I don't know.
For
that's
time
like...
killing.
I love that site.
It is a time suck.
Yeah.
Big time. Did you play with the sand thing on... Do you go up to dig.com at all?
Not very much.
Not very much?
Occasionally when I'm looking for good articles.
They had the sand animation thing that you could actually play with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, online. It's some Java thing. It was that... Talk about a time suck. And completely and utterly pointless. Anyway. So, check out the movie and audio archive. There's free shit out there.
Very cool. Yeah. Speaking of movies, one of the things that people are doing now, which is becoming a big industry.
I've seen this.
Virtual product placement.
Yeah.
There's actually a company. Let's see. What's their name? Oh, crap. I don't know what the company name is here.
The show comes to a grinding halt.
I know.
Marathon Ventures?
Marathon Ventures. they put a virtual Club Crackers box
into
a scene. Okay, so what these guys do is they have they have software that goes through and analyzes a movie or some section of video.
Really?
And helps to determine where would be a good place to put a product. Where does it look, you know, where it will look feasible, you know what I mean? Where it will look out of place. And the software they use to actually put these virtual products in there has to basically account for lighting changes,
right,
camera movements, all that kind of stuff, so it doesn't stick out like a sore thumb.
Sure.
So there's a couple of companies, I guess, that now are they're in the runnings for this kind of stuff. They get hired to put virtual products, you know, non-existent products. Find places to put them. And I know we talked a couple weeks ago about the fact that...
We see it in placement more and more.
And we're looking, I mean, we're talking about the fact that commercials may go away in lieu of virtual product placements.
I am all for that. My big hesitation is product placement as well as commercials.
Yeah, I don't want both.
That would really suck. If
we're going to have that for a while, though. During the transition stages, you're going to see both.
Well... As long as we don't see, if we see fewer and fewer commercials and more product placement, I'm okay with that. Because I watch TV for the stories, you know, and if there's a Club Crackers box sitting on the table, I could give a shit.
Right.
If the guy's drinking Coke instead of cola, I could give a shit.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't really matter to me. I do know that a lot of people have complained about, have you seen the TV show The O.C.?
No.
The OC does this a lot, actually, and they write it into the script. That's a little bit annoying.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah. But at the same time, for example, one of the characters on there is like this really geeky guy.
Okay.
And he was talking about how cool the new X-Men or the new Spider-Man 2 game was for his PSP. Right? And it's sort of made sense for the plot. And if you've got him talking about video games, why bother to make up a fake one?
Right.
So, but it was obvious enough that it was product placement. And I don't know if that's because I'm not used to it or that it was a little too obvious.
I think it's probably a combination of both.
It's probably a combination
of both. When somebody, and see, there's the thing, you know, what I love, like when I watch a movie and someone mentions a phone number, it's immediately I'm
555.
Immediately I'm drawn out because they say 555, and immediately I'm like, I'm watching a movie.
Right.
Right. It's the same thing with that. Oh, I was playing Super Ecto Ball for my PSQ, and immediately I'm like,
that's not a real game.
Come on, that's not a real console. It's not a real game. It's nothing.
Bullshit.
You know. Yeah. So now we're used to hearing that, and when they say a real one, you go, wait a minute, did they just mention the PSP? I have a
PSP.
Right.
That's true. That's true. But the thing is, and I think the difference is that when you have the makers of Spider-Man 2 coming to the writers of the OC saying, write us into the show this week.
Right.
Then the writers may have to change their original script for the show to incorporate this mention.
Of course, they have to.
If it happened the other way around and the writers were saying, well, we've got to mention a video game, so...
Who
wants to pay us for it? That, I think, would work out a lot better.
But it won't happen that way.
Well, there'll be some transition.
Yeah, there will be transition.
But this is really interesting. So essentially what it is they don't have to mess around. They don't have to do any of this stuff in production.
Right.
They can do it all in post-production.
Right. And it's like watching a football game right nowadays. They have those banners and stuff.
Yeah, I've
the
seen
The ads
those.
On those are virtually placed.
That's right. I've seen them on the field for football games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so somebody pays them to do that. So you may have an episode of the OC and somebody goes, hey, I want, you know, Cheez-Its. We show a box of Cheez-Its somewhere during the course of the OC.
Right.
So they scan this thing with their application. It finds a good place to put a box of Cheez-Its and there you go.
I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that either.
Unless there's like... You know, a box of Cheez-Its sitting next to a box of Ritz sitting next to a box of, you know, they've got this tower of crackers
right
on top of their table.
Right.
That would be good.
And they, of course, they can't do that. I mean, that you have to balance the audience happiness versus, you know, those advertising. But you need those advertising dollars. You don't have TV.
Right.
That's how TV makes money.
Right. It's tough. Although, I'll tell you what, I am more than happy to pay for HBO.
Are you?
Because I get Sopranos, I get Deadwood, Sex and the City when it was on, it's not on anymore, but Carnival. They make probably the four or five shows that I watch the most and I anticipate the most are all on HBO. Rome,
and you pay for that, so
and I pay for that, so I don't have to, I get no ads. And part of the reasons I am glad to pay for it is that there aren't any commercials,
right?
So I don't know. I mean, I think that's a good model as well, is just to say, hey, for these five or six channels, pay me $30 a month. Eh, okay,
right. And especially if, like we talked about that, right? A la carte TV.
A la carte TV.
I'll pay more to know that I'm going to get the shows that I want to watch.
Yep. And in fact, when Lost comes back on, I probably will not watch them on TV. I'll probably download them from iTunes at $2 a show, put them onto my iPod, and watch them on my TV through that.
That's a good idea.
Commercial free.
That's a good idea.
Now, it gets a little bit expensive because $2 a show, I think, is expensive.
$2 a show? I don't think so. Not when you figure right now the going rate for a piece of music is
yeah,
is
but
is a dollar.
But what you're talking about then is four shows a month, so that's $8 a month.
Yeah.
$8 a month for one show.
Right.
Right now, I'm paying like $30 a month.
How much is it to buy the episode one DVDs for Lost?
Well, probably like $50.
Okay, so $50.
So, yeah, you're so right. So it breaks down. If you're purchasing a DVD or something, it probably breaks down to about the same.
Right, or very close.
Or very close.
And then at least you're getting them as they come, and you don't have to wait till the end till the DVD's available.
I did the math on Battlestar Galactica, and it was actually cheaper by a little bit to download them than it was to buy them.
Which would probably make up for, you know, what, the extra $2 it takes them to make a package to process that.
That's a whole other story. I think that the pricing for online music and online videos is outrageous. I think it's insane. Because
Think about this. If you're like, I work for a jukebox company, right? I work for this company, and we have an online server where you can go download music that's not physically on the jukebox.
Right.
You can say, I want to get that piece of music, even though I know I'll pay more for it.
Right.
It's a dollar. You pay a dollar to play one song one time.
See, that's nuts.
Right? So now, if you pay a dollar to own that song, to put it on your iPod, and you can play it as much as you want, ever, to the ends of the earth, because you paid a dollar for it.
Well, this is what I'm comparing it to, is a purchased CD.
How many songs are on a CD? 12 to 15. How much do CDs cost? $12 to $15.
Right.
That's a dollar a song.
That's right. But I'm going to download it off the internet.
Right.
You don't have to pay to ship the CD. You don't have to pay the plastic. You don't have to pay for the assembly of the case. There's a lot of overhead that you don't have to pay for anymore when you're not distributing a physical media.
But they don't
There's
have
a lot of
people.
Things that I have to pay for, i.e. iPod or computer, that replaces the physical media.
Right.
So now I've gone out and I've purchased an iPod to house my digital media, so that company doesn't need to pay for the physical object that houses the media anymore.
But you have to offset the people who will buy iPods and other storage media to listen to their music and download it versus how many people still buy physical CDs. I would imagine the number of people who still buy physical CDs is much bigger.
Oh, I would agree, but I think that the companies are making a much bigger profit off of the downloading than they are off of the physical CD. Because there's much overhead and distribution.
We do. Think about it. We're charging a dollar for you to go download a song.
And I think that's insane.
Overall, our boxes that are connected
What it comes down to is not what's fair. It's capitalism.
Right.
How much will people be willing to pay?
Right.
And if you guys at a dollar a play were getting no traffic at all, you'd lower your price.
Exactly.
And I bet your company would still make money. But right now, you know that I'm sure they've done the economic curves to say a dollar is our price point. It's what people are willing to pay.
Oh, wow.
And
don't get me started on that.
Yeah, well, you know. But I'm sure that Apple has done a lot of that too.
Right.
And the 99-cent price point psychologically is a good price point.
Right. It's a dollar, and people associate a dollar with nothingness. It's a dollar.
Right. But I've run up some pretty big bills on iTunes.
Well, that's because you're a techno slut.
Well, my thing is I've never downloaded an entire album.
No, and I would never
do that.
I've bought a total of maybe 5 songs from iTunes.
I've probably bought about 30, maybe 40.
Yep. And see, the reason I don't is because I know that it's so easy to just click on that little 99-cent tag and boom, you got yourself a song. Hey, cool.
Well, I've probably spent 30 or 40 bucks in iTunes, and I've probably spent about 20 or 30 bucks in Music Match.
Yeah, see, and I it's too dangerous, so that's why, which is why I don't do it.
But at the same time, you know, how many CDs is that? That's one of the things I do like about iTunes is that you get exactly what you want.
Right.
You don't have to go out and buy an entire CD, not like 3 or 4 of the songs, but still pay for it.
Right. That's my big problem. That's a lot of the reason, too, that I don't buy music. I mean, I 2 songs at most off of any album I've ever listened to I really liked.
Right.
And would listen to over and over and over again.
Yeah.
All right. Woo! Wow.
Virtual product placement. Wow, that was
the next thing that I
we
that
are
I found
fucking
here.
Rambling on this episode.
Digital cinema versus pirates.
Ooh, cool.
All right, they started now using digital players to play at movie theaters.
Interesting.
And what they do is they embed time codes and information about where the movie's being played on a movie.
Oh, so nice.
Currently,
dude.
What happens is they do this already. They have a reel of film. That reel of film has a code on it that you can't see with the visible eye.
Oh, really?
Believe it or not, they used to actually put a high-pitched sound in there that humans couldn't hear.
Really?
And they could use it to track it down to a specific reel of film.
Ah,
now
very
what they can do is, since it's digital, they can put it in as you play. So they can track it down to the time and the specific theater that a movie was played in.
Ah, very cool.
So these people who record movies, not only that, they can put in noise and bad frames every once in a while that humans can't see,
right,
but will mess up a digital camera.
Well, I do know that one of the things they've been trying to do is mess with the frame rate.
Right.
So that you get a flicker effect on a standard camcorder or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're trying to, you know, one more tool in the pocket for these guys to fight piracy of movies. And I think that's actually a really good idea. And the whole digital, the move to digital media now, even in the movie industry, is a big deal. And it will help them.
Well, I'll tell you, not that I necessarily discourage the behavior, but I sure as shit would not take a video camera into a movie theater anymore. Hell no.
I never would. I don't see the point. I mean, I've seen a couple of those movies where people have done that, and to be honest, of all the movies that I've seen that have been filmed that way, like 2 of them have been even worth having around. And I only had them around long enough to buy the real copy because I like owning the original copy.
I think that, and people have been sort of alluding to this idea, at least around the internet that I've heard, is selling the DVD at the theater. So, like, the
selling the DVD at the theater?
So what you do is you sell the DVD at the theater, and the only way to get the DVD is if you have a ticket stub.
Oh.
So the DVD is released with the movie in the theater. That way you don't have to worry about piracy, right? You don't have to worry about people ripping off your movie because you're making money twofold.
You know, and that's a good idea, actually, because a lot of the reason people do this is because they want the movie now. I just saw a really cool movie in the theater. I want the damn thing now.
Well, and I have...
If I gotta wait for a year, that sucks.
And I have a particular case with my wife in that she gets really, really claustrophobic in theaters. She can't deal with being around that many people, especially when she's trying to watch a movie. And if she's trying to watch a movie and somebody crinkles their bag behind her, she can't refocus on the movie anymore, you know? And I think it's... I really think it's like a claustrophobia, you know?
All right, so the only way she can really watch a new release is when it comes out on DVD.
On DVD, yeah. And that's very frustrating for her.
Well, now, but of course, we talked about this before, too. What's eventually going to happen is movie releases are going to happen at home on TV. They're going to do a movie. They're just going to get to the point where everybody's got this, you know, digital TV, high def, da-da-da-da-da, and you say, hey, the new Star Wars movie's coming out. I'm going to pay my $10 or $20, and I get to watch Star Wars on release day at home in my own personal
theater. Now, that would be pretty cool, too. I would be up for that as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea.
Right. Now, of course, you realize that what's going to happen there is that people are going to figure out how to digitally record it off of that. And then they're just going to...
People are always going to find a way to record stuff
illegally. But I think the point of having the DVDs in the theater is that I genuinely... I'll give you a good example here. I know a guy that used to download his episodes of Lost off of BitTorrent.
Okay.
And, quote-unquote, this guy... the problem was is that when you miss an episode on Wednesday... You're fucked. You're done. There's no way that you can watch that. They don't even rerun the episode. And the only way you can watch it is either BitTorrent the thing or just wait for the season to come out on DVD.
Right.
Well, now there's another option.
Right. You can download
download it from iTunes, put it on your iPod video.
Feel somewhat ethical because you paid for it.
And then easily transfer it, easily watch it on your TV.
Right.
And for $2, not a bad deal. It's a lot easier than all the fucking around with downloading it from BitTorrent and converting your video file to blah, 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 and the thing and the stuff.
Right.
The only thing that is irritating is that you can't take the video from iTunes and burn a DVD. Mm. Because it's DRM'd.
Right.
So it's got rights management. So the only way you can do that is with a video iPod. Ah. It's getting there.
Right.
It's getting there.
We're going to have a huge transition.
But I think the idea about DVDs in the theater is that you need to give people options or they will do things that aren't legal.
Right.
Because they don't have any other options. So.
All right. Well, with that being said, I'm going to give a quick review of the movie Collateral.
Which one was Collateral?
Tom Cruise, Jamie Foxx.
Oh, wow. See it? Yeah, I saw it a while ago.
Yeah, it's old movie.
Okay.
It's not new.
Okay.
I just wanted to give my take
on
it. I liked it. I did like it. It took me a minute to get used to it because it's not really an action movie. It's a story.
It is a story, definitely.
It's a character movie.
Yes.
And I have to say, let's see. I liked everything about it. Except the fact that I didn't like the fact that Tom Cruise's character did a total reversal. He went against everything he stood for at the end of the movie to get the final kill. You know what I mean?
I agree with that.
And it was like, for him, the way his character was and how clean and how groomed.
Right. His character was not an obsessive character,
exactly,
but became one.
Exactly. And I didn't see any reason for his character to all of a sudden become so obsessive.
Right.
You know, his character should have just cut his losses and left.
Run.
He would have done that. The situation was out of control.
That's what a professional would have done.
Right, and he was somebody who was in control constantly.
Right.
And the minute things spiral out of control, his character should have left.
Yeah.
No questions asked, nothing. Everything's gone, I'm gone. I'm out of here.
Not much of a movie then, though.
Right, and that was my other thought. Yeah. So then I started thinking about, you know, movies and the things that do that. I mean,
right.
In my opinion, you had to basically go against this guy's character to make the movie. So I thought about that, and I thought, well, wow, that kind of makes the movie
kind of crappy. At the same time, though, I think that you can sort of step back from that and say, if you were a script doctor, you would point that out as being a problem. Thus, you would say, we need to either change this person's character at the beginning of the movie, allude to the fact that he can kind of be out of control,
right,
or give him other motivation.
Right.
To do this thing.
And I don't think they succeeded in either of those two options.
So I think they could have still had the movie.
Right.
Right? And changed the script a little bit to make his character's behavior a little bit more believable.
Right.
So.
And the only other thing...
Good acting, though.
There was very good acting.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is one of those guys, in my mind, that's hit and miss.
I think some movies,
he's really good.
Yeah.
Some movies, he's...
Right? Yeah.
I thought he did a really good job in this movie. I thought Jamie Foxx did a really good job. The other problem I had with it was how they tried to glorify being a taxi driver at the beginning. I mean, it was like... You know what I mean? They tried to make it, like, exciting with all these weird angles and the taxi and and then he pulls out and you realize, this guy's a fucking taxi driver.
Right.
I mean, why... why did you show it in such a light to make it look like it was this dramatic deal?
Right.
I mean, it looked like a combination of, you know, like Hill Street Blues and NYPD.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, why did you go through all that trouble?
Yeah.
And I noticed that the beginning was a little long because they showed a lot of shots of just the taxi driving around. The taxi in the windowed building.
Right.
And it's like...
Come on. Get on with it.
Yeah, get on. All right. So on the D20 scale,
yes.
13.
13. Well, I will do a couple of quick reviews. First of all, you've already reviewed this, but I saw Serenity.
Oh. Love that movie.
I loved that movie. That is brilliant. So now I want to go back and get all the Firefly episodes.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just a great movie all the way around. The only thing, and I don't know if you did this, is I sort of caught on to the plot relatively early on. I mean, it didn't really challenge me.
I don't remember if I did.
The big plot twist.
Right. It wasn't about that.
It wasn't a big plot twist because no. I was like,
it was,
okay.
It was almost too simple.
Well, there was some clue that was given. I can't remember what it was. But as soon as that clue was given, I was like, oh, I know what's going on. And that was probably like 45 minutes into the movie.
I think that I was enjoying myself so much that
I
didn't think about it.
I really enjoyed the characters. I liked the speech.
Did you look
at
the beginning?
The speech pattern. I did. Oh, the other thing, Mike sent in a comment about that as well, saying, listen to the commentary on Serenity. Did you listen to the commentary?
No, I didn't. I haven't seen it on DVD. I only saw it in the theater.
Oh, there is a... what do they call it? There's a snap pan in that opening scene where he's coming down the stairway.
Yes.
And he snap pans around to the guy behind him.
Right.
That's a cut.
It is.
It's a cut.
Damn, yeah. The cheaters.
Yeah, Joss Whedon said he couldn't quite do the whole thing the way he wanted to do it.
Still pretty close.
It's still pretty
still
close.
Still very, very,
it was sweet.
Very well done.
It was sweet. And it was amazing because I'm sitting there thinking, and I didn't know that the first time I saw the movie. I'm sitting there thinking, is he ever going to cut?
Right.
Is he, I mean, and I think in the commentary he said they did that shot like 47 times.
That doesn't surprise me one bit.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
People moving, people interacting, dialogue.
Yeah. Definitely listen to the commentary. The commentary is definitely worth listening to.
All right, I'm going
to
do that then.
The other thing I've been watching lately is Battlestar Galactica.
Wait, give me the review of
D20. Oh, man. I'll give it a 19.
That's what I would give it a 19 as well.
Yep, it was a great movie. The other thing I've been watching is Battlestar Galactica.
All
right. I kind of poo-pooed Battlestar Galactica because all the handheld stuff, I've kind of gotten over it. I made the decision that I was going to try and tough it out, and I did, and I got used to it. So I started with the miniseries, and again, season 1 and season 2 are available through iTunes. So I'm going to get the DVDs instead, but that's how I started on it, is I downloaded the first episode of the first season, and I was like, oh, this is pretty fucking cool.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a good show. It's a really good show. It's got some dramatic elements into it. It's got cool sci-fi. It's good stuff. There's a really complex plot. There's traitors in the midst, all kinds of cool shit.
Interesting.
So just from what I've... The miniseries, because I've watched the whole miniseries now, on the D20 scale, I'd give that a 16.
Oh, not
solid
bad then.
16.
Not bad.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Okay.
So we better move this along because we're already an hour into this.
Yeah, I know, and I had a bunch of stuff I wanted to do on
role-playing.
Role-playing. Yeehaw!
Movie making. We're just real quick. This is for the link. Have you checked this out?
I did look at it, yes.
Yeah, there's the IMDb, which is relatively famous. It's
yep.
the Internet Movie Database.
Yes.
And this one is the IMSDB, the Internet Movie Script Database. So if you're a...
script junkie.
If you're a script junkie, and especially if...
I am.
You're a script writer, then it's a great way to go through and see how other people are doing it.
Right.
You know, they say there's no better training to be a writer than reading what other people write.
Yep. In fact, all the script stuff that I ever do, when I'm stuck or have trouble because I'm working on a script,
yeah.
I go back through and just start reading scripts.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I do it because I want to see how it's formatted, how they did this, how they talked about certain
things. That's a lot of it, too, is formatting, you know? It's like, well, how descriptive do they get about the scene? And is it really a lot of dialogue? Or is it not a lot of dialogue? Do they... I know that one of the things that you had talked about when script writing is how much emotion do you portray the characters as having?
Right.
Or you do you leave that up to the directors and the actors?
Right.
So that's tough balance.
Yeah, it is. And it's very tough. I think it's very tough. I think it's really difficult to write that, especially now. I've been working on a novel that I'm writing.
Yes, and, how's that going?
It's fun. I've slacked off over Christmas break because I've been so busy.
I've slacked off everything.
Yeah, but it's very different from script writing because you get to talk about things and do things
in detail
you would never do in a script.
Sure.
Because I get to decide how my characters act
and look,
what they're thinking about, what the room looks like.
Yeah.
In a movie, you don't do that.
Right.
You present a story and you present the dialogue with a general tone.
Right.
But in the end, some guy may come in and play a character completely different from what you in your mind had, but it fits. It works because that actor can make it work.
Right.
In a novel, it's like in a role-playing game, you're the guy who makes all that stuff up.
Yeah.
It's up to you.
Yep.
So, anyhow.
So, RPG stuff. Let's move on.
All right. There's a link here about what's a GM.
Oh, yeah.
All right. All this is...
Who sent this?
I can't remember.
We're bad podcasters.
We are bad, bad podcasters.
Was this... I think this might have been Blue Screen Mike again.
Maybe it was. I think you're right.
I think so.
All right. Well, what this is I think you're right. I think it is. It's basically a list of all the definitions.
Really interesting.
Of what a GM is, a game master, for those of you who don't know. If you don't know, slap. but it goes through, and this guy's taken, I think he's got 69 RPGs.
It's really cool.
From 1989, they're just in alphabetical order. So sorry. So they're alphabetically ordered. It's 69 different RPGs in their definition of what a GM is.
Wow, some old school stuff, too.
Go through and read through it. It's a pretty fun read. Somebody specifically mentioned in here the one about...
Vampire, Tune, Star Wars, Star Trek, Shadowrun, Ringworld. Oh, Ringworld
Paranoia.
Is a great game. Paranoia, Middle Earth. Did you ever play Middle Earth?
No, I didn't.
Middle Earth was a lot of fun.
Kill Puppies for Satan. That's
no,
an RPG.
No definition
no
provided.
No definition for the GM. Anyhow, good for the link there. Go check that out
if
you roleplay at all.
Fun stuff.
I'm going to give two quick reviews. I bought two books for Christmas.
Oh, you did?
Weapons of Legacy.
Nice.
Weapons of Legacy is basically all sorts of... It's not quite relics, but they're weapons that are near relics, and they're weapons that level with your character.
Wow, really?
So what happens is your character will find out, this is a good use for some of the skills, you find out information about this long-lost weapon that has a history.
Yeah.
And as you learn about its history, you learn these rituals to open up powers on your weapon. And certain powers are only attainable, and certain rituals are only doable when you reach certain levels.
I think that there is a... One of the big allures in D&D is magical weapons and magical items.
Oh, yeah.
Is that there is... and it's true of, like, any... Or of a lot of the mythology and things like that. There's always some item of a mystical quality. And
right.
It's just...
And one of the things this book does is they basically use that idea. And they say, look, these weapons... are impressive because these weapons have been through things.
Right.
This is the sword this really famous warrior, held a hill against 200 men by himself with this sword.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So these,
and then
these
you
weapons,
get the sword.
Right.
Know?
And then you find the sword.
Yeah.
And you find out about this, and you perform this ritual, and now you have these abilities.
Yeah.
The other thing is, it also provides you rules for creating your own legacy weapon.
Oh, nice.
Where your characters do something impressive.
Yeah.
That leaves a legacy. And it affects your weapon, and your weapon will be imbued with special properties because it's seen this history, this past.
Well, I know that in the last adventure that I sort of I wrote the outline for, at least, I had some fairly powerful magical items in there, and
what Elminster's sword, right?
It was
whose sword was that?
It was Stormbringer, which is from the Elric series.
Elric,
that Michael Moorcock wrote.
Right.
And so I sort of just made up rules for a Stormbringer sword.
In fact, they mention Stormbringer in the book.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, they don't have the sword in there, but they allude to it.
Okay.
And they mention it by name in there and talk about those kinds of weapons.
And actually, I had the idea for the sword, and then I just couldn't think of a name for it, so I thought, well, what the hell, call it Stormbringer.
See, this book would have been perfect for determining what things you could do with Stormbringer.
I'll tell you what, they loved those magical items.
I know.
And the other one I stole from a book as well was the tapestry that you can walk into.
Mordenkainen's
mansion.
Mordenkainen's mansion,
it's a permanent Mordenkainen's mansion on the tapestry. Which they loved that too. And, you know, I think, like I say, I don't know that they ever used it.
They did.
Did they?
Remember they housed the child they put
that's
in
right.
the tapestry
that's
with
right.
one of the other players to guard
that's
it.
That's right.
Because they got attacked by the shadow things.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And the other thing that's really good about this book, they provide you a mini adventure along with each item.
Ah, so you can run a little adventure for them to get the item.
Yes. It's brilliant.
Cool idea.
On the D20 scale, I'm going to give this book an 18.
Whoa.
Yes.
Nice.
The next book I got, Heroes of Battle. This book describes how to run and basically build a full-fledged war around D&D.
Now that's a cool idea.
And this book is, both of these books in my opinion are probably two of the best books I've ever read.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Without a doubt. And the Heroes of Battle it's brilliant. I mean, they walk you right through how to create armies, how to use them, how to draw your maps and how to map out how the battle occurs, how to get your characters involved and how they can influence the tide of war. They reintroduce morale checks, which was something from the original
game.
It's no longer around.
Oh, I didn't realize it was no longer around.
Yeah, a couple of new prestige classes, some really good feats, teamwork feats.
Very
where
cool.
You can get feats that basically enhance your party as a team, and there are certain things they can
do. We'll have to incorporate that into something, dude.
Yeah. Oh, no. Somebody's calling me. All right, we'll be right back.
All right, sorry
about that. I think there was a salesman.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so Heroes of Battle, I'm going to give that a 19.
19? Wow.
A 19 and a 20 scale.
19. Holy shit.
Yep.
All right.
I highly recommend both of those books for
Very
anyone
cool.
who plays D&D.
Very cool. Okay. PNP versus MMOG.
Yep.
I don't know what this
one is. Last article is PNP. Basically, pen and paper RPGs.
Oh, versus MMORPG.
Versus the massive multiplayer online role-playing games. The only reason I threw this in here is because this guy was having a discussion. He talked about the fact that
it's an interesting line of thought.
Right. What he talked about the fact that look, you know, you may not be able to easily find a group. I mean, how often do we roleplay?
Well, and we talked about this when you mentioned that commercial.
Right.
With the guy and you know, he's sitting in a dark room
on a computer
and it was an
if you're
ad.
Gonna be an elf, bring your friends over and pretend to be elves with them.
It was an ad for a pen and paper game.
Right, and it was Wizards of the Coast ad for D&D.
And you're absolutely right. I think that it's we play probably 3 or 4 times a year.
Right. So when we're not playing, it's like, well, I still want to role play.
Right.
But I don't have the time to set up games. I mean, I'm the game master. I mean, when I set up a game, it takes me some serious effort.
Yeah.
Sometimes I want to role play and I don't have to think.
Right.
So when I'm in that kind of mood, I play a massive online role playing game.
Yeah.
You know, right now I'm in the DDO beta. And when I want to play Dungeons and Dragons and I don't want to have to be a DM.
To be able to
shoot out. It's not exactly pen and paper. No, it's never going to be. Because there are too many things that you can do. Too many things that a human can do.
Can you say whether they've opened up the voice chat?
Oh, they've already announced that.
Oh, they have.
Yeah, they do have the voice chat.
How does it work?
Is it very buggy?
It's very buggy.
It's not, and they're not. It doesn't really work
well
yet.
But what about the idea?
Oh, it's great.
Okay.
It's great. For me personally, I'll only ever use it when I'm playing with my friends online.
Right.
I won't use it for people I don't know. I feel uncomfortable. I don't want to talk to strangers.
Right.
I'll type to them.
Sure.
And I've been in a couple of groups where somebody's asked if anybody's on voice chat, and I always say no. You know, because I don't want to talk to.
You don't want to talk to strangers.
I don't know what this guy's going to say. I don't want to have to talk to them.
But
and
for
have
friends,
them giving me crap, because I tell you what, the minute somebody gives me crap over voice chat, I will fucking throw down. I will be like, you know what? Listen, bitch, we're playing a game, and if you don't like the way I play, you can kiss my ass.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's easier if I just ignore what they say. I'll type it because I'm friendlier when I type. Yeah. If somebody pisses me off, I'm more inclined to just ignore it because you can't.
I do the same. I do the same thing when I play Halo 2. Is oftentimes I'll. You have in Halo 2, it's kind of nice in that, or on Xbox Live, you have your chat that is over the headphones.
Right.
And so you can turn down the headphones but still hear the ambient sound.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
Yep. So, and I feel comfortable talking to my friends because we can talk smack and nobody's ever going to get anybody.
No,
if one of my friends gets uppity, I smack him down and we all laugh about it.
Right. But I do think that my first choice would always be pen and paper.
Mine too.
My second choice would be online.
Mine too. It's just so hard to get a pen and paper game together. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of setup time.
I do think that...
For the DM anyway.
Well, and I think that we run differently because if we had... If you were the DM for three people and it was a pre-made adventure...
Right.
It would not be nearly the big a deal as it is now. But we just don't play like that. Right. And
And even if I ran pre-made adventures with 12 people, the setup time is me trying to go through all the encounters and balance them for 12
people. No, I agree.
So I can't even do pre-made adventures with our party
now. It's the combination of the non-pre-made adventures and just the sheer amount of people.
Right.
But like I say, if we had a weekend, if we had every other week, we got together and ran three characters and maybe an NPC that the DM ran.
Right.
Right? So a well-rounded four-character party, which is what all the CR ratings are for.
Yes.
Then it would be relatively straightforward, you know?
Yep.
But that's just, I don't know, I love getting together with just a huge group of guys.
It's fun.
Yelling and screaming and smoking outside.
I love all the tactical stuff. I love using the minis and watching
me too.
Try to puzzle out the best way to approach this conflict. And it's fun.
So I think that we could do it more frequently, but I don't think we'd get the same enjoyment out of it as we do with the big groups and stuff.
I disagree with that. I would love to play a weekly campaign if I could, but nobody can do it. Everybody's too busy.
That's true.
It's just not possible. Everybody's got their own lives and their own cities and all that kind of crap. Yep. So I'll take what I can get.
We should schedule a monthly.
I don't even think that would work.
Just a once a month?
I mean, you only get a handful of people that show up.
Well, that's maybe the idea.
Well, but then you have to run a whole separate campaign. Because we have this one campaign we've been running for 2-3 years now.
Right, and then you have to have a separate
everyone's
campaign.
Everyone's in on it, and I've already got two side campaigns going.
Oh, you do?
That when we only get a, when only a small amount come, I don't want to continue the main adventure because people miss on it.
Right.
So, so I started an Eberron campaign with Buddha and Ben and John.
Okay.
And which is only going to get run. I mean, Ben can never come around. I mean, he's got two kids.
But
now
when the whole big group can't and they can,
we play
it's
the
nice
side
to
adventure.
Have a separate campaign.
Right, and in those I'm using stock adventures. I'm using the Eberron campaign adventures.
So anyway, let's wrap this up. Holy crap.
Yeah, we don't have. I'm going to have some video game stuff next week.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because you got Texas Hold'em.
I want to talk about World Championship Poker 2 for the PSP.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Well, we made up for the fact that we didn't have anything last week.
Yes, and then some. I don't know, dude. We got to do the next two guys, soon. I'm jonesing for it. The next episode of Two Guys.
Yes, I am too. In fact, we should do it soon because the weather's cooperating right now. Yeah. We can finish that thing without having to do the alternate. I don't want to give away what we're doing.
Yeah, don't give away the plot! So, you should see that coming, but... That's it. I'm Dan, and I'm going to go back home and tend to my sick wife.
Ah, I'm Sterling, and I'm going to play some DDO.
Nice.